Welcome to the ADAA podcast about treatments for anxiety disorders. Today we're talking with Dr. Peter Roy Byrne of the University of Washington School of Medicine, Harborview Center for Healthcare Improvement for Addiction, Mental Illness, and Medically Vulnerable Populations, CHAMP. Dr. Roy Byrne, let me ask you the first question. What is new in terms of treatments for anxiety disorders?
Well, I would say that in the medical arena, there is nothing right now that is startlingly new compared to probably what we've had in the last 5 to 10 years. I think that people are trying to better understand what the place of the newer atypical neuroleptic medications are as adjunctive agents for treatment-resistant anxiety. These are the agents such as Seroquel, Zyprexa, Risperdal. These are the agents that originally were developed to treat schizophrenia, were later found to be useful as adjunctive agents for treatment-resistant depression, and in some studies have been shown to potentially have value for treatment-resistant anxiety. My understanding actually is that one of them, Seroquel, is even right now seeking an indication or approval as a treatment for generalized anxiety. My sense about that is I would not want to see that agent used at a widespread level as a first or second line agent, because many other treatments are already available for the anxiety disorders. We're now just obviously talking about the medication treatments, many different antidepressants. Benzodiazepines, although they have risks, probably are much safer in terms of long-term risks than the atypical neuroleptics. And I think that one of the things that my work in primary care has shown me is that many more people fail to respond to medication treatments, not because they are resistant, but because the treatments have not been administered correctly. The individuals have not received the right medicine at the right dose for a long enough period of time. I think that there are many more people failing to respond because the quality of what they got was deficient, rather than that they have some resistant kind of anxiety that needs and is in seek of some new novel medication.
Are there new kinds of drugs, novel medications being developed?
Well, you know, there are a number of new agents on the horizon. There are the CRH antagonists, which antagonize the stress hormone response system, the cortisol stress hormone response system, corticotropin-releasing hormone. They're being developed for depression and obviously potentially for anxiety. Early trials have not found they're terribly useful for depression yet. They're certainly going to be tried in a number of anxiety disorders. There are substance P antagonists as well that would be tried for depression and anxiety. There are new agents targeting the glutamate system, which is the opposite system from the GABA benzodiazepine system, that's an excitatory neurotransmitter system. A number of them are being developed to modulate that system in some way. But a lot of these agents are some period of time away from approval, and we still are not clear whether any of them will represent a major development or advance over what we already have available currently.
And so in terms of the medications that are available currently, are there some that are tried and true that you can count on to be effective for specific anxiety disorders, or is it up to each individual patient?
Well, again, the standard antidepressant agents such as the SSRIs or the SNRIs now. SSRIs would be your Zoloft, Prozac, Paxil, Celexa, Lexapro. Virtually all of them, but Lexapro, are generically available, so they're much cheaper now. The SNRIs, so-called because they block the reuptake of both norepinephrine as well as serotonin. Serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor, Effexor, is the most common one, and now we have duloxetine, whose trade name escapes me currently. They are mostly beneficial for most of the garden variety anxiety disorders. Benzodiazepines are very effective against anxiety and probably are particularly effective when added to an antidepressant in someone who's failed to completely respond and get a full enough benefit. Some of the newer agents being marketed for pain, pregabalin, Lyrica, gabapentin, Neurontin, these agents are not first-line agents, but they may have some anti-anxiety properties similar to the benzodiazepines. The antidepressants are oftentimes thought to be more beneficial because probably a half to two-thirds of people with anxiety will have a depression as well, and so it's useful to have an agent that's not just an anti-anxiety agent like a benzodiazepine or a Neurontin or a Lyrica, but an agent that would help depression, whether you have it now or whether you might develop it in the coming months.
So that leads me to ask if a patient has more than one anxiety disorder or has a sleep disorder or an eating disorder, does that change any of the medications or do these same things work?
Well, more than one anxiety disorder would not change things, though. If you have more disorders, it probably means you have a more complicated, difficult-to-treat disorder, and that doesn't mean you won't get better, but it means you probably should have a more conservative expectation that it will take a little longer for you to fully recover, and you have to be a little more hardy and resilient about hanging in there and not giving up hope early on while a number of different things are tried. Sleep disturbance is a common part of depression and anxiety, and oftentimes you would potentially need to consider adding a sleep agent, although, you know, we know, interestingly enough, that behavioral treatments are probably more effective than hypnotic medications such as Ambien, for example, although it's hard to get people sometimes to be tenacious enough to do the work that's required to combat their insomnia with a cognitive or behavioral approach. And same can be said for the anxiety disorders in terms of treatment. We know how effective cognitive and behavioral treatments are, and they're probably equivalently effective as medications in general, though I suspect there's some individuals that will require medication even if they try to work on a CBT level. And vice versa, there may be some people that actually don't do that well on medication, and CBT would be preferable. So we have to keep an open mind. I think one of the things that I'm usually most aware of about medication that is unfortunate.
Welcome to the ADAA podcast about treatments for anxiety disorders. Today we're talking with Dr. Peter Roy Byrne of the University of Washington School of Medicine, Harborview Center for Healthcare Improvement for Addiction, Mental Illness, and Medically Vulnerable Populations, CHAMP. Dr. Roy Byrne, let me ask you the first question. What is new in terms of treatments for anxiety disorders?
Well, I would say that in the medical arena, there is nothing right now that is startlingly new compared to probably what we've had in the last 5 to 10 years. I think that people are trying to better understand what the place of the newer atypical neuroleptic medications are as adjunctive agents for treatment-resistant anxiety. These are the agents such as Seroquel, Zyprexa, Risperdal. These are the agents that originally were developed to treat schizophrenia, were later found to be useful as adjunctive agents for treatment-resistant depression, and in some studies have been shown to potentially have value for treatment-resistant anxiety. My understanding actually is that one of them, Seroquel, is even right now seeking an indication or approval as a treatment for generalized anxiety. My sense about that is I would not want to see that agent used at a widespread level as a first or second line agent, because many other treatments are already available for the anxiety disorders. We're now just obviously talking about the medication treatments, many different antidepressants. Benzodiazepines, although they have risks, probably are much safer in terms of long-term risks than the atypical neuroleptics. And I think that one of the things that my work in primary care has shown me is that many more people fail to respond to medication treatments, not because they are resistant, but because the treatments have not been administered correctly. The individuals have not received the right medicine at the right dose for a long enough period of time. So I think that there are many more people failing to respond because the quality of what they got was deficient rather than that they have some resistant kind of anxiety that needs and is in seek of some new novel medication.
Are there new kinds of drugs, novel medications being developed?
Well, you know, there are a number of new agents on the horizon. There are the CRH antagonists, which antagonize the stress hormone response system, the cortisol stress hormone response system, corticotropin-releasing hormone. They're being developed for depression and obviously potentially for anxiety. Early trials have not found they're terribly useful for depression yet. They're certainly going to be tried in a number of anxiety disorders. There are substance P antagonists as well that would be tried for depression and anxiety. There are new agents targeting the glutamate system, which is the opposite system from the GABA benzodiazepine system that's an excitatory neurotransmitter system. A number of them are being developed to modulate that system in some way. But a lot of these agents are some period of time away from approval, and we still are not clear whether any of them will represent a major development or advance over what we already have available currently.
And so in terms of the medications that are available currently, are there some that are tried and true that you can count on to be effective for specific anxiety disorders, or is it up to each individual patient?
Well, again, the standard antidepressant agents such as the SSRIs or the SNRIs now. SSRIs would be your Zoloft, Prozac, Paxil, Celexa, Lexapro, virtually all of them, but Lexapro are generically available, so they're much cheaper now. The SNRIs, so-called because they block the reuptake of both norepinephrine as well as serotonin. Serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor. Effexor is the most common one, and now we have duloxetine, whose trade name escapes me currently. They are mostly beneficial for most of the garden variety anxiety disorders. Benzodiazepines are very effective against anxiety and probably are particularly effective when added to an antidepressant in someone who's failed to completely respond and get a full enough benefit. Some of the newer agents being marketed for pain, pregabalin, Lyrica, gabapentin, Neurontin, these agents are not first-line agents, but they may have some anti-anxiety properties similar to the benzodiazepines. The antidepressants are oftentimes thought to be more beneficial because probably a half to two-thirds of people with anxiety will have a depression as well, and so it's useful to have an agent that's not just an anti-anxiety agent like a benzodiazepine or a Neurontin or a Lyrica, but an agent that would help depression, whether you have it now or whether you might develop it in the coming months.
So that leads me to ask if a patient has more than one anxiety disorder or has a sleep disorder or an eating disorder, does that change any of the medications or do these same things?
Well, more than one anxiety disorder would not change things, though. If you have more disorders, it probably means you have a more complicated, difficult-to-treat disorder, and that doesn't mean you won't get better, but it means you probably should have a more conservative expectation that it will take a little longer for you to fully recover, and you have to be a little more hardy and resilient about hanging in there and not giving up hope early on while a number of different things are tried. Sleep disturbance is a common part of depression and anxiety, and oftentimes you would potentially need to consider adding a sleep agent, although, you know, we know, interestingly enough, that behavioral treatments are probably more effective than hypnotic medications such as Ambien, for example, although it's hard to get people sometimes to be tenacious enough to do the work that's required to combat their insomnia with a cognitive or behavioral approach. And the same can be said for the anxiety disorders in terms of treatment. We know how effective cognitive and behavioral treatments are, and they're probably equivalently effective as medications in general. Although I suspect there's some individuals that will require medication, even if they try to work on a CBT level, and vice versa. There may be some people that actually don't do that well on medication, and CBT would be preferable. So we have to keep an open mind. I think one of the things that I'm usually most aware of about medication that is unfortunate is most individuals feel that if they have to take medication, it's a sign they're really sick. Oftentimes a patient will come to my office and will say, "Don't tell me it's bad enough that I need medication." It's a marker that somehow you're marked as being sicker or more ill. I think that's unfortunate. And by the way, they surveyed first-year psychiatry residents at Columbia University several years ago, and the residents felt the same way as well. So it's not just the individual patients, but in fact the people being trained to be psychiatrists to administer medicines also have this in their mind. And I think this is a very unfortunate thing, because it doesn't mean that you're sick or less sick or more sick. It simply means that we don't have available the behavioral treatment that might help you when you might need some medicine. And I do think it's unfortunate that in this day and age we don't think to question people with, you know, diabetes or hypertension that they need medicine, but we still say it for people with anxiety and depression that it's a weakness, it's a moral failing. And I think that's unfortunate, you know.
I know people are often worried about side effects, so how do you manage those?
Side effects are an important thing. The first thing that I do is, if at all possible, I try to have an individual with anxiety begin to keep a rating of both their anxiety symptoms and any other physical symptoms they have for at least a week or 10 days before I give them medicine, because they may find that certain physical symptoms that they later might attribute to a medicine might be occurring intermittently before they start the medicine, and it's important to get a baseline measure. Then you have to be aware that these medicines can cause side effects. Some of them will go away with time, and that if you're aware too much of a side effect, you could be more sensitized and get it. And so it's a delicate balance between telling people what they need to know and telling them too much. And oftentimes, if you tell people a list of 10 or 15 or 20 things, certain anxiety disorders, such as panic disorder, are marked by individuals that characteristically are oversensitive to internal sensations in their body. So these individuals will be very sensitive to the possibility of having a side effect. And if you give them a medicine and tell them they might feel A, B, C, D, or E, or F, it's possible that they will be very sensitized to that. And there have been studies showing that when you give people a placebo and you ask them, that they will have side effects from the placebo too. So some side effects are mediated by an exaggerated attention and cognitive awareness. Others are truly probably related to the medicine, and it's very difficult sometimes to distinguish those two. But the bottom line is, I always tell people that I treat, do not take this medicine if it's really interfering with your quality of life and you have very bad side effects. I said, just stop it. I wouldn't take it. But, you know, we all have a range of what we're willing to put up with. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And sometimes it's interesting. You'll find that older people are paradoxically more willing to take medication in general. And it may be that they have aged more, they have more aches and pains and other symptoms in general, and they're not quite so used to the fact that nothing at all could be wrong out of the ordinary, or they won't take something.
Are there any areas of research that you personally would like to see undertaken in this arena?
Well, I really wish that we were able to have some independently funded comparative research on the effectiveness of different medications for anxiety. And we really don't. Most of the research is funded by industry. As I mentioned to you, one of the atypical neuroleptics, Seroquel, is now seeking a indication from the FDA for generalized anxiety. And what I would like to see is studies of generically available cheap benzodiazepines head-to-head with Seroquel and placebo to convince me that Seroquel is better and safer than already cheaper and available benzodiazepines. And nobody's going to do that study from industry. And I don't know that we'll see that study, and I think we should.
Well, I think there's hope for that. We'll end on a hopeful note.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Roy Byrne. This is Jean Kaplan-Tycho for ADAA.